Drivetime are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And welcome back to the Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. Well, it is 6 o'clock. Shortly thereafter, it's time for our weekly installment of Consider This Live. My co-host with me, of course, Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. And joining us in the studio is Colin Brown, LLB. Is that right? LLB?
It is, yep.
And Colin, of course, is a local solicitor, lawyer, human rights interested individual, and you've done a lot of work in libel cases. Today we're going to be talking about freedom of speech in Canada, whether or not it is real, whether or not we have freedom of speech like they do in the U.S. Interesting piece from the Huffington Post. This one's from Tom Cott. Think Canada allows freedom of speech? Think again. And this goes back to 2013. This is an older story, but an interesting story. And of course, you know, while we were sitting here in the studio trying to, you know, put together the conversation we were going to have, we really had to seriously think about what we could or couldn't say over the airways. So really, does freedom of speech exist? Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thanks for having
us. Welcome. Hello.
Very, very glad to have you here, Colin. Obviously, one of the things that sort of piqued my curiosity was a number of messages sent. We were talking about the Ontario Civil Liberties Association, and I remarked to Colin, I didn't even know Ontario had a Civil Liberties Association, and they're pretty new from what I understand.
Yes, as far as I know, they started in 2013. There is a Canadian Civil Liberties Association that is much older, but the Ontario, someone in Ontario, Joseph Hickey is his name. He decided that we needed our own, and I think that's a good idea.
Well, I would have to agree. I mean, now, freedom of speech is very different in Canada than it is in the United States. I mean, in the U.S., freedom of speech, I believe, is absolute, right? You can pretty much say whatever you want to anybody you want. Any way you want. You still can't run into a theater and yell fire, but I mean, other than that, freedom of speech is pretty much a wide open thing. Now, in Canada, of course, we have hate speech laws. We have all kinds of other laws that sort of cut into that ability to speak freely. Yeah, I myself actually have found myself in some hot water from some of the things that I've said on my show here, specifically with regards to certain political aspects of my show. When I talk about Israel, for instance, or Zionism, or the illegal occupation of certain territories. Oh, you can't say that. You can't accuse anybody of anything like that. I mean, I had a person threaten to have me pulled off the air by the CRTC simply for reading a news story, Colin.
Okay, I think that I can give you a nice example of how nervous people have to be about what they say. I now have to qualify, because you started out by saying that I've done a lot of work in libel. What I have done is I articled in civil, in the civil litigation, and the lawyer that I worked with did defamation, so I worked in defamation as an articled student and for a few years afterwards. But look how much time I have to go to qualify that, because I don't need to worry about somebody saying, oh, well, didn't you say you were a libel lawyer, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. That is freedom of speech. But that's not the kind of colorful thing that we want to talk about necessarily tonight. Now, you were saying, what's the difference between the U.S. and Canada? As far as I understand it, because we have the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, Section 1 in particular, mm-hmm. Section 1 says, yes, it's nice to be like the United States where you can say basically whatever you want. But here in Canada, we're only going to let you say whatever you want so long as it's reasonable. Mm-hmm. Now, that is a ridiculous regime to be under, because the term reasonable is a purely subjective thing. So from case to case, one person may say X is reasonable, one person may say Y is reasonable. So the question really is here, We also have hate crime in the Criminal Code of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And right now there's a trial in BC or Alberta where a gentleman is actually was convicted and acquitted at the same time. He was convicted of Arthur Topham, convicted of one count of hate crime, and he has a website that was talking about the Jews, and then acquitted on a very similar count. So it appears as though the jury, at least in his case, is a bit confused, and it's a very confusing and terrifying area because the penalties are jail.
Well, one of the things is Section 319(2) of the Criminal Code outlaws the willful promotion of hatred against an identifiable group, and Section 319(1) bans any incitement that leads to a breach of peace. So all of these terms, like you said a moment ago, reasonable limits, what is that, reasonable to who? Hate messaging, you're not allowed to do that. Breach of peace, those are all subjective terms that are utilized by those who feel it is their duty to enforce political correctness and prosecute anyone who offends them. Now,
Hold on. Whoa. It's before we get too far down the road. I'm going to just say that I think that freedom of speech, you know, we say, well, it's an illusion and that's a terrible thing. I don't think these things are terrible things. I think we do need hate legislation and we do need laws around this. We do need things that, you know, breach of peace. We do need things, concepts like reasonable limits. And while, you know, we might all those who want to take this to an extreme, want to go to the far end of the spectrum and say, oh, look, we've lost our freedom of expression. We haven't. We have the right to say we're having this discussion right now. You do read these articles on air. And while people disagree with you and feel that they want to take action, there are opportunities for us to go and have these things mitigated and negotiated in a court of law and decisions are made and precedents are set. But I think it's important that we have a responsibility here. I don't think it's just something that the door gets open and anybody can walk through or do anything or say anything and not have repercussions for it. And I know that one of the things we want to talk about today is Judge Robin Camp and some things around him. And I think though these are important things to talk about, and the fact that we do talk about them indicates that we do have freedom of expression. But this idea of political correctness being brandished as some sort of talisman against common sense and common decency is wrong. I mean, I just think it's a smokescreen for people who don't want to have the time to be considerate or be thoughtful or to just, I don't know, wave a red flag in front of a bull thinking they're making a good point.
Well, I think political correctness is probably not the right term anyway, because they say it's politically correct. But really what it's about is not being a jerk, right? I mean, it's about respecting other people. It's about respecting individuals.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not about, you know, it's making off-the-cuff comments about people that you have no information on just because of either the color of their skin, the faith that they believe in, or anything like that. I don't think that's political correctness. Well, I just think that's just being a good member of society. I mean, it gets to the part where, you know, we are a society. We're supposed to be a society that, you know, is free to express what we believe. But again, when it comes to hate, nobody wants to hear that.
Well, I think sometimes the freedom of speech argument is a mask for misogyny or being cruel or being mean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people need to have manners. They need to treat people with respect and with dignity. And, you know, we have to remind ourselves of the dignity of individuals and other people, regardless of their gender and how they should be all treated with decency. And I think that that's what it comes down to. And you know,
we should have the right to call a spade, though, right?
Well, I think what we have the right to do, absolutely, we should be able to have the ability to talk openly and to be critical and to be thoughtful. But at the same time, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about treating people with decency, and being mindful and respectful.
Well, the thing I've always heard about the U.S. is that, you know, freedom of speech exists not so that you can say anything that you want to offend others, but so that others have the right to say things that may be offensive to you, which is a bizarre argument.
I have to agree, and I'm glad that Rob interjected and took the position that we do have freedom of speech, because the fact of the matter is, to jump up and down and say that that we don't and we wish that we were in the USA makes no sense. I think what needs to be done is that we need to have a very clear test in order to determine whether or not something should be allowed or not. And Rob has used the term mindful and thoughtful twice, or used them once each. And that's what we need more of. And instead of just sort of reacting to, for example, the word nigger, oh, there, I said it. Instead of just reacting to the word, you need to think about what context it was used in, and you have to use your brain. You have to have a test so that you can decide in that context. I mean, are the police going to come and arrest me? I'm black. I'm on a radio show where we're talking about freedom of expression. So if I use the word nigger now, do I get arrested? Does that make any sense? No, it doesn't, because of the context. So I think that if you apply your brain and not just your knee-jerk reaction to these issues, they're not really complicated.
Well, that's a valid point. I think that a lot of these things get lost in thought, though. Because they involve thought, a lot of people just don't want to take that time. And it may only take 5 seconds to think, well, you know what, he's made a pretty valid point, or that's a good point, or I don't agree with that. But the ability to agree or disagree with something involves thought. You know, and this idea that we would just respond with these knee-jerk reactions, you know, when you talk about Robin Camp, I mean, the concern that people had about the judge and what he said was twofold. One, he's a judge, and secondly, he said what he said from the bench. Now, if he had said what he said in a cocktail setting with some people talking around, and he said, you know, so I thought to myself, well, maybe she should have just kept her legs closed.
Well, you should let people know. I'm not obviously not everybody who's listening to this has any idea about the case.
I think I'm going to do that right now, actually.
I also think that anybody that's listening, if they find, we're going to be talking about a sexual assault case. So if anybody's sensitive to that or there's young children in the room, they may want to give themselves a few minutes here to remove them, because we're going to get pretty explicit here.
Well, we are talking about those things. And okay, so let's get to this case. This comes from November. An Alberta federal court judge, it's a federal court judge sitting on the bench, folks, who once asked an alleged sexual assault victim why she couldn't just keep her knees together. Apparently, he's apologized for that. He's undergoing sensitivity training, according to a statement from the Federal Courts of Canada. Justice Robin Camp was placed under review by the Canadian Judicial Council on Monday. This was, again, back in November, after a complaint was made by three law professors who said his treatment of the female complainant was appalling and showed disregard for the law. The complaint refers to a trial that took place when Camp was still an Alberta provincial court judge, in which he acquitted a man of sexual assault that was alleged to have taken on a 19-year-old homeless woman. Now, during the trial, Camp alleged that the victim, whom he mistakenly referred to as the defendant, things such as, why didn't you just sink your bottom into the basin so he couldn't penetrate you? Why couldn't you just keep your knees together? According to court transcripts, Camp also said that sex and pain sometimes go together, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. A statement issued Tuesday from the federal court said that Camp won't hear any cases involving sexual conduct during the CJC investigation, that he's volunteered to undergo gender sensitivity training of his own accord at his expense. Now, the statement also included an apology from Camp, which read, "I have come to the recognition that some things I said and attitudes I displayed during the trial of this matter and in my decision caused deep and significant pain to many people. My sincere apology goes out in first place to the young woman who was the complainant in the matter. I also apologize to the women who experienced feelings of anger, frustration, and despair at hearing of these events. And I'm deeply troubled that these things that I said would hurt the innocent. In this regard, I'm speaking particularly to those who hesitate to come forward to report abuse of any kind or who are reluctant to give evidence about cases, abuse of sexual abuse or otherwise. And to that extent that I have said discourages any person from reporting abuse or from testifying about it, I am truly sorry, and I will do all in my power to learn from this and to never repeat these mistakes." Now, University of Calgary law professor Alice Woolley, one of the three lawyers who complained, she said she wants Camp removed from the federal bench. "I've never seen conduct as bad as this in my time as a lawyer or as an academic," she said, "and it creates a risk that people won't trust that they can go to court to solve their problems." The Canadian Judicial Council, however, Executive Director Norman Saborin, now, he said that although federal court judges cannot be removed without an order of parliament, those under CJC reviews sometimes realize the matter is grave and resign of their own accord. Camp was appointed by the federal court by former Justice Minister Peter McKay in June, the job which has a salary of $308,000 a year, which, by the way, is, in my opinion, inconsequential. But
so
I mean,
that's a CTV news story.
This is the CTV news story that we have, exactly. That was one of the links that you guys had sent to me with regards to this. But so we have a couple of issues here. Does he have the right to say what he wants? Does he have a right to say what he wants from the bench? And does he have the right to say what he wants as a judge, especially during a case in which his statements could be considered prejudicial?
Well, I'll jump in because I think it's an excellent case to help people wrap their minds around the multi-layered issues. Now, the very idea that judges should have freedom of speech at all is not people. It's not something that people even realize is the case. But the fact of the matter is that judges in Canada are supposed to. It's supposed to be accepted that they are human beings, just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. That they have perspectives and opinions, and they are supposed to use those subjective opinions and personal biases in order to help inform them when they're making decisions. They're not supposed to pretend to be robots of any sort.
Right.
Now then. Whether or not a judge who is in the middle of a trial should have the same kind of freedom of speech that some guy in a tavern should have, I think most people would say probably not. What do you think, Rob?
I would say that it's important that they have the freedom of expression in order to, as in recent cases where the Supreme Court and other have spoken out openly against certain legislation, or that they have the freedom to talk as candidly as they need to about the issues that they face. I think that's absolutely critical if we were to have a court system that is going to function in the way that it is, as a check and balance against the laws and the lawmakers. However, I go back to my earlier points. Freedom of expression in this case shouldn't be a mask for misogyny. He's doing, as far as I'm concerned, victim blaming, which is, I borrow from our own prime minister. It's 2016, and it's a new era, and we don't do that anymore, and we shouldn't be doing that anymore. And it's important that our courts aren't doing that kind of thing. And when he did and said what he did, if what's reported is accurate, then it's. It's just he's displaying a lack of bad manners. He's treating people without respect, without dignity, and it's demeaning. So it wouldn't matter whether it was a man or a woman. I don't think any judge should be allowed to do that to any person that's in front of them on any charge.
All right. So am I right that your answer is that you think that the individual and the judge in Canada, that the freedom of speech regulation should basically apply the same way to both groups?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I agree, but my perspective on this particular case is different in that I think Rob took the position that we need to have judges who are able to say, I disagree with legislation. For example, when Harper put through all the mandatory minimums and other judges overturned them, mm-hmm. we need to have people say, look, I disagree. In fact, we need to have mm-hmm. the right to disagree. This is what this whole show is about. I'm sure that's what the Ontario Civil Liberties Association is talking about, and that's what the journalists are talking about. We absolutely need the right to disagree, whether or not you're an individual mm-hmm. or whether or not you're a judge. But we will accept that the individual in a tavern may, because of his involvement with group A, B, or C, have such a biased and skewed view that he's making no sense. And we act as though judges are never that way. Well, it's entirely possible that this judge is, as Rob has suggested, a misogynist. So he could possibly the interpretation that's happening now is that the Canadian Judicial Council seems to have decided, well, no, that's misogynistic. And for those of you who don't understand the term, that means that he's biased against women. Mm-hmm. However, my perspective, and I've taken a little bit of a look at this, is where some of the things that he has said in the context. I'm not so sure that he's biased against women. The fact of the matter is the people who lodged this complaint did not take a position on whether or not the decision in terms of acquittal or guilty, not guilty, didn't take a position on that at all. So conceivably, and we don't have all the facts and we're trying to get all the facts before we, invest here, conceivably you've got a situation where the guy is not guilty. And the guy's what happens all the time, quite a lot of documented cases.
This has happened often.
Yeah, it's a situation where somebody has said somebody is guilty. They actually aren't guilty. And the judge knows it. And that is what's informing the judge during the trial. So we mm-hmm. don't know. We haven't done enough. Mm-hmm. But I think we don't have enough information on that. But I think you're really going to get into trouble if we simply go with the flavor of the day, which is basically
he's a misogynist.
Right, exactly.
Well, my position
just,
is
if
this.
Can I make a clarification before we go too further? Is that I'm not suggesting or saying directly that Judge Robin Camp is a misogynist. I'm simply saying that we can't use freedom of speech to mask certain issues like racism, like misogyny, and that kind of thing. And if I did at any time indicate that that was made it that direct connection, I apologize.
And I agree with him. I agree with what he's saying. And this is why it's important to have this kind of discussion, because this is not simple mm-hmm. stuff. It requires, you know, this kind of discussion.
Well, and to get to the point that I was making, or I thought I was making anyway, was that, look, I don't have a problem. If he's got this opinion and he's sharing it with his friends at the local pub, that's entirely up to him. He may be right-minded. He may be wrong-minded. It may just be his thought while he was with that group. But the difference is he's on the bench. Now, we're not expecting him to be a robot and to respond to legislation and to the laws in simply a robotic fashion. We want his life experiences to impact on how he makes his decisions or whether or not he's making right or wrong decisions. But the issue that I have is that we've got a sitting judge who's basically telling a woman who is a victim of sexual assault that, you know, she's a victim because it's her fault. She didn't keep her legs closed. She should have dropped her butt into the sink so he couldn't penetrate her. Like, what it says to me, whether or not the gentleman in the case was found not guilty, but what it says to me is that he is presuming something about her as the victim that is based solely on his opinion, which was that she should have just closed her legs or sunk her butt into the sink. But again, he's blaming the victim here. You wouldn't have been sexually assaulted if you'd kept your legs closed. You wouldn't have been sexually assaulted if you'd put your butt into the sink so he couldn't penetrate you. So the reason you were sexually assaulted ultimately was because of your inaction. And that's the problem I have, because I don't want judges. I mean, I get it that he's got an informed opinion, but I don't want judges to say to victims, because what the ultimate result will be is that, you know, like for generations, victims of violence. And we know that, what 4 out of 5 young girls in this country will at one point experience sexual improprieties, whether it's sexual assault, touching, bad language, what have you. You know, we're talking about a 50% plus, actually, of the population of Canada who are now basically told, you got to keep your legs closed. You got to sink your butt into a sink so you can't be penetrated. This is the position that I get from that judge.
I don't think it's about the decision. I think it's about his treatment of individuals. And I think that's really what's at the heart of this. I mean, we're not really being critical of whatever decision a judge makes. That's fine. It's how you treat the people that you're in front of you. And I don't care whether you're a CEO, you're a celebrity, you're a sports star, mm-hmm. you're a judge in this country, you're a politician. You don't get to treat people like he did. Period.
Okay. Now, I have to agree with what Rob is saying. And I think that in your case, Dave, there's two different processes that we have to keep in mind. Now, appealing the decision would be where all the things that you're talking about would factor in. Mm-hmm. So in terms of whether or not he was actually – whether or not the guy got a fair trial, whether or not the case was fairly prosecuted, whether or not the defense was fair, all of the issues that you're talking about in terms of misogyny and in terms of asking these questions, they would definitely be front and center in the appeal. But in terms of the freedom of expression and freedom of speech issues, I have to agree that – you should not be rude. You should not be insensitive. You should not, especially as a judge, harass somebody who's before you as in the role of victim, even if you don't believe them. You should not be demeaning them and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But the question really is, what if what you're saying is true? Should it be that what you're saying isn't acceptable as the truth, even if it's true? Now we're going to jump into, we might get somebody calling in on this one. Part of this case is where the quote basically from the judge is that sex and pain go together sometimes.
Sometimes, yes.
And there is a suggestion from the media and apparently from the Canadian Judicial Council that sex and pain never go together in any kind of consensual activity. Mm-hmm. Now, I think most of the people who are listening to this hopefully are not prepared to take the position that you couldn't possibly have any pain involved in consensual sex. Hopefully. So the problem is, from what you've said, we do not want the law in Canada to allow judges to demean potential victims. We also don't want the law in Canada to be that if anybody ever has sex and there's any pain, it's a crime.
That's right.
But really what you're talking about
that's a good point.
Is trivializing the whole matter by trying to raise something, and I realize what you know where you get into, well, can they say this or can they not, or is it true, is it not true? I think I know in journalism we have a rule of fair comment. We have to monitor what we say because we want to make sure that we're being factually based. And where does that comment have any place in law? And it doesn't. It doesn't have a place, and
What comment?
Well, the comment about pain and...
Oh, incorrect. It has a complete place in a sexual assault trial. What do you mean, where does it have a place in law?
Why do we even need to talk about it? Why was it relevant?
Well, because there are very few sexual attacks where the complainant will not say that it was painful. Well, I think we can probably guess that was part of the evidence.
Okay. I was
well, on that note, folks, we're going to take our first break of the hour. We will be right back with more of this conversation. Joining me in the studio is Colin Brown, Rob Washburn, my regular co-host here at Consider This. And, of course, you're listening to The Drive Time with Dave Glover right here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. We will be right back. And welcome back to The Drive Time. A little Echo Beach there for you, the original Eminem. I'm Dave Glover. Welcome back to the show. We are talking about freedom of speech. I guess the point I was trying to make here really is that, you know, it's not acceptable. There's an ad running right now in Ontario where, you know, they got the employer saying, oh, why don't you go up on the top shelf there and get some books down for me because I like looking up your skirt. And basically the catchphrase is, you know, if you can't say it, it's not all right to think it, basically. Or, you know, it's not all right to think it, it's not all right to say it, I think is that. And I think the point that I was making with regards to the judge's comments, you're in a position of authority. You're the judge. And, you know, you're the guy that everyone's supposed to be listening to. You can't say things in a courtroom that is contemptuous of the court because you'll be found in contempt. But it seems to me that what was being said by the judge, and again, it was his opinion, right? It was contemptuous of the process itself. I think his particular language, I mean, he could have said something else. The English language is a wonderful language. There's lots of ways to say all kinds of different things without being offensive, without being rude, without being demeaning. And I think, you know, maybe he should have chosen his words differently. Maybe he should have thought perhaps a little more about what he was saying. But what I get is what he was saying was based on his interpretation of the victim. So he was drawing an opinion himself and using his opinion, self-drawn, to express that within the court. And I think that is definitely problematic. I think the argument that, you know, other victims might feel as though they can't come forward because they'd have to go through the same demeaning and insulting language from a judge. And I definitely do think that it is problematic. Now, he says that he's taking sensitivity training, but I would argue that as a judge, there should already have been some type of sensitivity.
Colin, as a lawyer, what latitude does a judge have in terms of when they're passing sentence or when they're commenting in the courts? What's the role of commentary then in a courtroom?
Well, that is a very good question. It is really not laid out very clearly. There's a sort of general sense that what Dave is saying is true, that there should be no chastising and no demeaning, and the judges are supposed to be very polite and very proper with the way they speak. However, what we tend to see is because in criminal courts in particular, and in family courts, but mostly in criminal, because some of the crimes are so hideous and disgusting that you can see that the judges are influenced by this. They're personally offended, and the community is personally offended by some of the things that we're seeing. So it then calls upon the judge to try and make it very clear to the person before them and for the record that they are disgusted, that the community is disgusted. And sometimes judges get very, very, very colorful and animated. And so from case to case, I think you would expect in a less serious case for the language and the behavior of the judge to be more tempered. But I think that when the case gets very serious, they sometimes lose their composure. Yeah.
Yes. And so is this really what we're coming – is at the heart of our discussion is where does that line lie then when they are making those commentaries? And what is the role of the judiciary then in reflecting community values when they're passing sentence?
Another excellent question. I think that when we started out this discussion sort of trying to figure out if an ordinary person and a judge should have the same responsibilities, so the same rights and the same responsibilities. I mean, we know that a right is the flip side of a responsibility. That is the question. So let's get away from judges for a second and go to the bigger picture, and then we can come back to the judges thing. So as an individual in Canada, your freedoms, not just your freedom of speech, but any freedom that you have. Your freedoms, I think we all sort of understand that you can be free to the point that you begin to encroach on somebody else's freedom, John Stuart Mill. It's a philosophical idea. So you can't just have the freedom to run around and do whatever you want, because there are other people whose freedoms you bounce into.
Exactly.
So I believe that you should definitely have restrictions on the judges and restrictions on people in terms of what you can say. And we've already mentioned the you can't yell fire in a crowded restaurant, but you also can't call somebody up as a joke and say, hey, I saw your son shot 7 times in the chest on the news 5 minutes ago, and hang up. You can't do that. That's intentional infliction of emotional distress. It's a tort. You can be sued for that. I don't think you can be arrested for it. But we as a society, we do not think everybody should be able to say anything that they want. Mm-hmm. Now, the Ontario Civil Liberties Association website seems to take the position that, like the U.S., they're in defense of the capacity to say anything you want at any time. And I don't think that makes sense. So how do we determine, as Rob is saying, how do we make a decision on a case-by-case basis whether or not a particular piece of speech violates our standards? We need to have a test. And I propose that if you can compare it to running into a theater and yelling fire, if you can compare it to what I've just said, picking up a phone and calling somebody and saying that their child is just killed, or if you can compare it to inciting a race riot, so being at in some sort of charged atmosphere and screaming, go get them, go get them. I hate black people. Go get them, go get them. If you're inciting hatred like that, if you're basically starting something, if you're actually actively doing something,
mm-hmm.
that's one thing. What if you just say, I don't like plumbers, to your friend at a tavern? Is that a hate crime? I think it's very easy, in my opinion, to differentiate between something that is actually dangerous and something that might be. And mm-hmm. I think that you should be looking at something that you can actually say is actually dangerous. Have I lost your the train of thought here? What was your question?
I was really looking at, you know, what is the range in which the judges can speak and make these editorial type comments in as part of a decision, and how far should they be allowed to go in making in sort of editorializing in these comments?
Well, basically, as far as I understand appeal law, unless you can show how the comments indicate a bias either against the group or the individual person in front of them, unless it's a bias, there is really no restraint on how vicious and how upfront and sort of brutally honest or brutally angry a judge can be. So long as the judge can then say, listen, here's a guy that came before me, you know, on his 27th drunk driving conviction, so I unloaded on him. And I had no mercy for him, and I called him everything in the book, not because I'm biased against him because he's, you know, from Bewdley, not because I don't like him, not because I don't like that particular guy, but the fact of the matter is the community standard is X, and this guy is a pariah. And so there's nothing stopping the judges from just unloading, mm-hmm. as far as I know.
Well, there's a certain aspect to free speech that involves personal accountability, and I think a lot of the problems that we have when it comes to people being offended or the whole political correct thing is that we've moved away as a society from this idea of personal accountability. As long as you're no longer personally accountable, as long as the society as a whole doesn't get up in your face, you don't have to be personally accountable. So you can pretty much do and say whatever the hell you want, as long as when you hit that stop or you hit that wall, which is accountability being put upon you by society. Because what I see out there is a whole raft of people out there who are, you know, like I was talking earlier about the situation with my dog. I mean, you know, people don't have the right to just, you know, spew verbal diarrhea, whether it's offensive or unoffensive, because there's no thought here. And I think it's a lot of it has to do with personal accountability. You have to be accountable. You know, freedom of speech is supposed to be the U.S. model is I'm free to say whatever I want to, even though it offends other people, just as they're free to say whatever they want, as even if they want to offend me. But it goes beyond that. It goes to personal accountability, because, you know, you have to put yourself in. I think a lot of it has to do with putting yourself in someone else's shoes. If you don't want someone to talk to you like you're a bag of crap, then you need to stop talking to other people like they're a bag of crap, right? I mean, it's accountability is a two-way street, right?
I agree. I think that that's very insightful. The fact of the matter is we have Canada attempting to craft hate crime laws which prevent people from offending other people. Mm-hmm. And what you've just said is we all have to be we have to realize that we all need to be restricted. We all need to bite our tongues. We all need to be responsible and understand. We can't just go around saying we don't like black people or we don't like Jews or we don't like this. Because the bottom line is, whoever you are, you don't want them going around doing the same thing. Same thing.
That's right.
So I agree. However, you need to be able to fight for your right to disagree. So if the bottom line is, the Palestinians are saying X, Y, and Z happened in 1317, and you don't agree that happened in 1317, you certainly should not be prevented from publishing mm-hmm. and saying, look, I don't believe that happened in 1317. I don't care who's saying it. I don't agree. So I don't think that you should be restricted in your right to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question of whether or not you should be restricted in your right to
voice that disagreement.
Well, no, in the way you voice it. I think it's a question is
exactly.
if you're trying, if, not trying, but if it can, if what you're doing is reckless in terms of the likelihood that as a result of what you're saying, well, see, here it's interesting. If as a result of what I'm saying, some psycho might hear what I'm saying and then go out and kill somebody, I don't think that's really my problem.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough. I mean, Rob, what do you think of all this?
I was just going to say that, you know, just in light of what Dave was saying, I also think that the context of things changes and our society changes and our culture changes. And sometimes maybe in the past, certain things were acceptable behavior. And we heard and said things that we did in one particular way at one particular time. But things change. And as things change, I think we have to be somewhat open to those changes. And we can't just simply say, well, you know, I used to be able to say this, or I used to be able to do this, and then, you know, say, well, now, you know, I'm being forced to be politically correct. Well, maybe it's time that we did accept that. And, you know, maybe at one time judges did talk like this to women. And maybe it was allowed or nobody said anything in response. But I think it's right that as time changes, we don't accept these things. And you know, I'll just leave it at that for the moment.
Well, it's funny because when you were talking, I'm thinking – because I know you do e-journalism. And what I thought you were driving at is that before the electronic communication revolution – I can understand how the law would be one way before and one way after, because 100 years ago, I could stand up and say anything and nobody would hear me and it wouldn't really matter. But now I can go online and I could post something which actually has a pretty decent chance of getting some idiot somewhere to actually go out and harm somebody, which is a possibility now. So the question really I have for you is, does electronic communication, Facebook, et cetera, does that mean we should restrict freedom of speech or expand it?
Well, that's a good question. And we're going to take our last break of the hour so Rob can think about what he's going to say. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. My guests in studio are Colin Brown and Rob Washburn, who's professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. He is a regular contributor here at Northumberland 89.7. This is The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat.
In City Hall in Toronto, could say anything he wanted, and basically 10 people might hear him. Now, for example, like internet bullying and stuff, you can get somebody to kill themselves by the kinds of stuff that you put on the internet.
So there's a guy in the States who's on trial for that right now, as a matter of fact, a nurse who was telling people how to kill themselves.
So the question really is, does the internet mean that we should now have our freedom of speech restricted, or... are we supposed to just accept that the there's a new reality and we now have more freedom of speech, I think, because we can reach more people more quickly? So do we just let it go, just let the beast run?
That's so complex and so difficult to answer simply. But what I will say is that I think we have to proceed with great caution and with great thought, because obviously there is a greater microphone. And when we do talk on these global networks, that we do have the ability to inflict incredible harm. and incredible pain on individuals. And so it's a new world. And I think that I don't really have a thoughtful response to that beyond simply that it's something that I think we're going to be facing, because obviously we've seen examples of where the federal government has tried to impede people's abilities to communicate over the internet, and that's not usually taken very lightly by the online community. But at the same time, we've worked our way through these issues in the past, and I'm sure we'll work our way through this one in the new environment.
Okay, so a couple of things you said that, and we've said this a couple of times during this hour, is we've got to be thoughtful and mindful. We've got to be conscious of what we're saying. And unfortunately, free speech doesn't, none of that's implied in free speech, right? I mean, and this is something we went to during the break, and I talked about, you know, being an a-hole. Free speech means you can be an a-hole. Means that you can offend people, but I guess it's all about degrees of a-holery, I think was the phrase I used, because you know you want to be a jerk, that's fine, but you want to be a particularly offensive jerk, well then society's going to say no, you can't do that, and it goes to the point that I was making during the break about this judge. In my opinion, the judge showed quite a degree of contempt for his own bench by saying what he said. And what I said during the break was that if someone from the defense or someone from the plaintiff or someone from the public audience had said what he said, they would have been found in contempt of court. I mean, I honestly believe that. So my problem is that then if someone else would have been found in contempt for saying those things, why then is the judge free to say that? That's where I have a problem. And I guess, as I say, political correctness is a term that really drives me insane, because I don't think it has anything to do with being politically correct. What it has to do with is being sensitive to the feelings and the responses of others to the things that you say. So again, being thoughtful, being mindful, being conscious of what comes out of your mouth. There's so many times that people are just not conscious. Oh my God, I can't believe I said that. Well, I was supposed to use my inside voice. You know, more and more people are using their outside voice, and they're using it on broad spectrums. They're using it in social media. I mean, there are countless cases now. You can be blocked on Twitter or whatever. But Facebook will suspend people's accounts if they find them to be offensive. They have the right to do that. Governments apparently don't, but Facebook has the right to do that. Twitter has the right to do that. And all of these other online forums have the right to do that. The concern is that when the governments do it. So I think people are becoming somewhat maybe ambiguous as to what their rights are and how far those rights can go.
I'm curious, though, just locally, what's been your experience, Colin, when judges have been speaking locally?
Well, really, there hasn't been any reaction locally at all. Basically, the judges locally basically say whatever they want, and we haven't seen any upheaval and anything even remotely close to what we were talking about earlier. So basically, there hasn't been any anything particularly remarkable here. But with what Dave is saying, I agree, and from what you were saying, Rob, earlier, these are issues that are very, very tough. They're heady, but we have to tackle them. And I have faith that we will get through if we keep a level head. I mean, Dave pointed out really that judges, they actually have more freedom of speech than the average person, at the same time that they have less speech freedom of speech than the average person, depending on the particular context. So I propose the following attempt to have a test to determine whether or not something, and you people can all try this, to determine whether or not something is hate speech, ask yourself, was the person who uttered the speech, were they trying to, or were they being reckless? Which means were they even if they weren't trying to do something, were they being careless enough that this might happen, that they caused a likelihood that what they said may cause harm, even if not directly, but somebody way, way, way down the net. If they're either trying to or being reckless by what they're saying, that there's a real likelihood. I don't like the word reasonable. A real likelihood of harm being the result of what they're saying, then perhaps that's a hate crime. Otherwise, say any unpopular, stupid crap you want, and you're good.
So again, degrees of a-holery.
Yes, exactly.
So final question, should Camp be removed?
Should Camp be removed as a federal judge? I think he should. I think he should. I think he should step down. I think if a guy, and I mean, he was appointed a federal judge after this occurred. So this, for me, this has two problems. One, we had a federal government that was appointing judges to the federal bench that, in my opinion, shouldn't be. I mean, I can think of Vic Taze as well, a guy who was having inappropriate relations with his babysitter. And then he gets appointed to the judiciary. That, in my opinion, is completely bizarre and wrong. Should he be removed? Absolutely. Because here's the thing. There cannot be a disconnect between there has to be a disconnect between what you think, because you are free to think whatever you want to, and what you say, which may or may not cause an undue harm to someone else. And again, you know, the point that was being made by the judge here was putting the onus on the victim in this particular case. As a matter of fact, he even referred to her as the defendant at one point, according to the transcripts. So even he was confused from the bench as to whom he was making his reference to. And I think if a person is a judge who has a position of authority such as that, and they can't be mindful enough of what they say, or be aware enough that of the impacts of what they say, that they don't have the right to be on the bench.
Colin?
Look, beautiful question. He warned me this was coming. It has turned out to be an excellent way to sort of try and wrap up the first phase of this conversation, because I disagree, which is perfect with Dave.
So and you have that right.
We're illustrating disagreement. And it's because of the reason that we've sort of all have been getting into, and that is, my position is, we don't have enough information. We need the trial transcript. If I read the trial transcript, I could make a decision. So I'm not prepared to say one way or the other what I think is going on, but the trial transcript is probably available. So we can actually get it, and we can actually have this discussion down the road, gentlemen.
Yes, we can, and that will be a discussion we have in the future. We've come to the end of this show, our conversation on free speech. Things are changing with the internet, and in honor of that, here's Sam Cooke. Change is going to come, folks. I'm Dave Glover. You've been listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. Stick around for All About the Music.
Like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna